Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now then, Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent is in studio on the day that Andy Farrell has named his second starting Irish 15, his second game in charge. The Welsh are coming to town on Saturday. Injuries have impacted on selection here from last weekend. Jordan Larmour starts at full back. Andrew Conway on one wing. Jacob Stockdale on the other. Robbie Henshaw is in. Gary Ringrose sadly is out with his thumb injury. Bundy Aki alongside Robbie Henshaw. They're renewing their Connacht days. We have Johnny Sexton alongside Conor Murray. No surprises. In the front row once again, Keane Healy, Rob Herring, Tyke Furlong. James Ryan once again alongside Ian Henderson. And then Peter O'Mahony comes into the side. Obviously Caelan Doris injured. Josh van der Fleer and CJ Stander make up the back row. Replacements, Ronan Kelleher, Dave Kilcoyne, TBC. He's in there at the moment. He is undergoing HIA protocols. If he comes through them, he'll be on the bench. Andrew Porter, Devon Toner once again. Max Deegan is the man in for Caelan Doris. He's on the bench. John Cooney, Ross Byrne, and then Keith Earls is back in the 23. Rory O'Connor.
Joe.
Thoughts?
Yeah, I think if this was the height of 2018 and we've been able to bring Peter O'Mahony and Robbie Henshaw into the team, it would be seen as a sign of strength. But it's someone sent me a WhatsApp earlier of the character from Scooby-Doo pulling off Andy Farrell's mask and revealing Joe Schmidt underneath. And it does look very much like Ireland 1.0 rather than Ireland 2.0. I don't see... Andy Farrell's basically said these are still the best players in Ireland. I just think I can get more out of them than we saw in the last year. And I think for everyone who called for change after the World Cup, for all of the noises around what's going on behind the scenes and the new broom and the freshness and all that sort of stuff, it's still looking for a tune out of all of these players. Now, they're two centrally contracted players. They're two Lions. We shouldn't grumble too much about the fact that we're able to bring two Lions in. But I think even just the fact that he selected Doris last week just gave it a little bit of freshness to it. Mm. But, you know, there's just a bit of a sameness to it. It's pretty much the World Cup team being asked to go again and to prove themselves. And if they do, if they go out and meet Wales, fair enough, he's made the right decision. But I think the easiest thing for Andy Farrell might have been to actually make more changes before his first game. I think he's actually taken the harder road when it comes to the court of public opinion, whereas internally he's clearly said to his leaders and his main men, I still believe in you. And he's potentially making a rod for his own back by doing so.
Mm. I mean, 2018 would suggest there is a lot more in these players, and he's perfectly Absolutely. Right to stick with the vast majority of them.
There certainly was then.
No reason why there won't be again, no?
No, absolutely. Robbie Henshaw's only 26, and I'm not going to protect, particularly Robbie Henshaw. I think Peter O'Mahony's having a mixed middling year, and, I don't like that back row. I would like to move on from that back row. I think a proper, I know CJ Stander was man in a match last week, but I prefer him at six. I prefer Peter O'Mahony at six. I don't like. I would like a number eight in the mold of a Doris or a Deegan or a Jamie Heaslip, and we have one of those in the squad who's fit. And he's gone for Deegan on the bench. I think the bolder call would have been to replace Doris with Deegan and to keep O'Mahony on the bench, even though he came in and did quite well. Mm. Also, Henshaw for Aki would have been a nice bit of freshness. Now it turns out Will Addison isn't fit. They didn't tell us that yesterday when they released their injury information, but he's got a calf problem. I would have loved to see Addison come in for Ringrose because I think he's more like for like. I also think Chris Farrell potentially offers a little bit more in terms of his hands and his ability to release players outside him. I just think against a team that held Ireland to no score for 83 minutes last season, that looks a little bit blunt, and I think you've lost one of your key attackers. Again, you're not calling. It's not like we're calling for the under-20s to be put into the team. There's good players in that squad, potentially better players for this task. But he's gone back to, in fairness, a guy who captained the Lions in the first test 3 years ago and who was the vice-captain in that sensational year.
And did make a bit of an impact when he came on.
He did. He was good. Yeah,
he
was
effectively good. He played the whole game.
He was good. But I just don't think he's getting... I think Ireland lost a lot of their carrying game when that back row was in the team. I know CJ will run into brick walls over and over again. I think at six, that's fine. I think CJ is the best six in Ireland at the moment. Maybe Reece Ruddock, but
didn't
not
he
in the
effectively
squad.
Play at eight at the weekend?
He did, absolutely. Yeah, so. But I mean, it was a perfect game for CJ Sander. It was a day for brick walls, and maybe if he'd had the Doris there, and it's probably asking a lot of the new cap, but he may have been able to rise above it and stand a little bit wider and not go for contact every time. Now, he won those collisions, and in particular, he won those two big turnovers, which you cannot underestimate. And as I say, I would have him in the team I just think that the balance of that back row is a little bit off. You lose a bit of your carrying game, and you seem to go back to that brick wall stuff that really Ireland ran aground with last year. Mm. I mean, Cooney Murray, I think, is decided for now, and it, you know, there wasn't enough from Cooney to displace Murray, I don't think, last Saturday. But even still, if he's, you know, maybe that's a little bit of freshness, the bit of spark that they need is someone like Cooney coming in. Mm. But then the injuries will have limited him in terms of, say, Dave Kilcoyne coming in for Keane Healy. We don't even know if Dave Kilcoyne's going to be fit. So,
yeah.
But yeah, he's made, as I say, he's made a rod for his own back to a degree, because if they do go out and they play like they did last season, you know, that there's definitely going to be, people will be up in arms looking for major change going to Twickenham,
yeah,
which is not really a venue where you want to go with an unproven, untested team. In theory, in the old way of looking at things.
No, it's true. I mean, I understand it, and I know you understand it too, and the need for momentum and to try and begin to turn the ship from 2019. And I suspect getting a win was to the fore of his mind, very understandably so. What did you make of the performance against Scotland at the weekend?
Yeah, I thought it was decent. Like I think there's been a bit of an overly negative reaction to it.
I think the feeling is, I mean, if Stuart Hogg didn't do what he did, we're in big trouble here.
We're in trouble. There's no guarantee that they would have got the touchline conversion, and also they got 3 points out of it when they were back for the penalty. So it's not as big of a swing as people are making out.
But they had a lot.
It was a self-inflicted wound.
A lot of visits to the Irish 22.
Most of which were as a result of Ireland's profligacy. I shouldn't have attempted that word. I can't really pronounce it. But like, that was Jordan Armour stepping into touch, if I remember correctly. That was a good decision, badly executed. I think those are things that they can tighten up really well, really easily. Mm. And I really liked the ambition that they had. I know people were going on about the box kicks, but I thought the box kicks, when they came, were sensible. And actually, when it was on, Ireland countered very, very well and showed real threats. And I don't think they did enough for all that Scotland. And my overriding emotion watching it at the time was that Scotland had wasted lots of opportunities. But on review, I felt that Ireland had messed up a lot of opportunities. And really what they needed was that scoreboard separation, that second try to get, you know, two scores between them so they could just relax. They gave a sucker an even break, and Scotland played very well. I think Scotland's physicality surprised them. I think we saw a wounded Scotland, and I think maybe we might see a wounded Ireland this week, because they've got a bit of criticism after winning, but also Wales hammered them last year, and maybe the emotional side of it will turn. But I do like the fact that they're getting Larmour onto the ball a lot more than they ever did with Rob Kearney, that he's going for it from his own line. I mean, it was also a messy match, I think, because Matthew Raynal had a terrible game and was basically a free-for-all at times, and that didn't help the flow. Mm. There were moments it was a bit scary for Ireland, but at the same time, they put Scotland in a few difficult positions and didn't quite pull the trigger. If they can build on that this week, you know, how good are Italy? We just thought, you know, yeah. Or how bad are Italy? I mean, how good was that Welsh performance? We're still not sure. I think they'll give it if they can tighten up those areas and take a few more of their chances, which is an if, it's a big if. But I thought there were signs of a bit of life and a bit of progress and a bit of what they've been doing in training.
Okay. Here's Andy Farrell. I have two clips of Farrell. The first one, he's asked here about the areas of the Irish performance on Saturday against Scotland, which he'd like to see improvement in.
We thought defensively we was really, really good at times, but consistently we felt we gave them yards a few times. Especially at the start of the match, we lost a few collisions. We can be better there. Our set piece, there's an honest and open forum there, and the boys are looking forward to this week as far as set piece is concerned. Our attack, we became a bit clunky at times, and Scotland had a lot to say about that. They really messed up our ball, and everyone wants to play off quick ball, but at times on attack I thought we created some real good opportunities. Did we see them all? Probably not all of them. So there's some opportunities that went wasted there. So there's been a fair reflection, and I think if we win a few more collisions and a bit more accurate winning the race to the breakdown, I think the creative side will come a little bit more. Sometimes, I thought we was too creative. Sometimes, you know, decision making was a little bit too expansive sometimes. But that's all work in progress. Those type of things, they do take time, you know. I'm sure that you saw little bits of glimpses of parts of it, you know, but we'll get better.
I watched his press conference. I mean, he comes across very well, very likable, very normal.
Yeah.
Fella, predominantly.
Very straight in the way he answers questions.
Yeah. Even when he talks there, though, about creativity, it's interesting he reverts back to winning more collisions. And the theme of the last 2 weeks, in many ways, has been about grit, determination, physicality, winning the battle up front, being the aggressors. Like, I thought, I was amazed in that respect that Scotland seemed to be more fired up physically. But also, it did strike me, and I'm not the only person, even Shane Horgan made the point in the Sunday Times the weekend, it's not like you would have really looked at Ireland over the last number of years, or even last year, and thought, oh, the missing ingredient here is a bit more grit, determination, character, all those kind of more old school values. But certainly publicly anyway, Farrell's pushing that message in a big way.
Yeah, I think, whatever about determination, I do think, you know, what was the one thing that came out of that England defeat at the start of the Six Nations last year? It was the first time we saw a dominant tackle stat.
Yeah.
And everyone was talking about it. And Ireland lost the dominant tackles again last weekend. And if you keep losing those collisions, it's that old cliche about earning the right to go wide. I think that's what he's talking about. It's like, you can have all the ambition you want, but if you're not winning the breakdown, if you're not winning the gain line, you're not going to be able to break free at all. And
are we a big enough team to
Really? I think we can be cleverer in what we do, and that's why I don't like standard eight running into brick walls from close range repeatedly. You know, James Ryan's a great close-in carrier, but it's just all, you know, it seems to be always him or standing 4 metres away with their hands out waiting for the ball, whereas Doris is someone who comes up onto the ball at pace. He might stand a bit wider.
He has a bit of footwork.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think O'Mahony doesn't carry really anymore. His carrying stats have fallen off a cliff in the last 10 years. He's reinvented himself more of a line-out forward and a breakdown threat, and there was value in that at the weekend. Van der Fleer is much more of a wide threat, you know, a pacey player, but Ireland didn't really get him on the ball last week. But for all of O'Mahony's virtues, I think he needs to up his carrying game if he's going to stay in that team. And, you know, he wasn't in the team at the weekend. He ended up playing. I think he was there to add kind of security. I think the plan was probably to build a bit of a lead and bring on Toner and O'Mahony, and Kelleher is a good carrier, and then you bring it home from there. Whereas, that went out the window. And that disruption can't be discounted either, of losing, you know, a player that early, losing wingers at halftime. That has to be factored into the performance.
Absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, I do think Ireland's carrying game and tackling game wasn't good enough on Saturday and needs to improve if you're going to beat Wales or in England, which are the next two opponents. And I think that's probably what he's gone back to basics on, as to, you need to, like, it's all well and good talking about systems and creativity and all those things. You need to win the fight.
Yeah. I dare say, you were probably at every Ireland game last year, were you?
I think so, yeah.
Sitting in the stadium on Saturday, did you look at the general shape of the team, the general methodology, the way they were trying to go about their business, and think, oh, this looks a bit different?
A little bit. Not to a degree. I mean, I think they're building off the framework that was there before. You know, I mean, Joe Schmidt was an excellent coach with an excellent game plan. It just went stale in the last year, and you know, he made the mistake, in my opinion, of sticking with the players when they weren't playing well, which potentially is a mistake his successor is making as well. He's, you know, I think they will in time layer things on and maybe stop doing one thing and start doing another thing, but a lot of the changes they seem to be implementing are more around the culture side and about relaxing the players. But also, I think, you know, I think Larmour was definitely having more of a cut than I don't think Jordan Larmour was worrying what was going to happen in the Monday morning review, you know, on Saturday, whereas before, because he had Rob Kearney ready to come into the team, and he got dropped every time he played. You know, every time he played well, Larmour would then be gone the next week because Kearney was fit again. I think on Saturday, Larmour knew he was being backed, and him and Conway had a cut. It didn't always come off, but I think if we're going to call for them to have a go, we can't really criticise them for making mistakes. So I do think that was there. I think they tried to go wide, and actually Farrell criticised him. He said, maybe criticise is a strong word, but he said
too expansive at times.
He said at times they were moving the ball wide and not noticing that there was a big gap in front of them to go through. And sometimes you just got to go for that gap. You know, it's just because the plan calls for the ball to go wide. If Bundiaki sees space in front of him, go for that space. And they forced a few offloads. I mean, and that's
maybe an eagerness on their part.
It's the first day out, and Johnny Sexton hadn't played in ages. You know, that was definitely a factor as well. Mm. But I thought there was a bit more. Like, there was times in the World Cup where Ireland attacked quite well. And I don't know how different the plan was. I think one game is too small a sample size, but I did think there was more intent to go wide. There was a slightly different shape. I saw Brett Ego, the analyst who's involved in UCD this year, put up a tweet today about the shape. And it's not my area of expertise, but he was suggesting that there had been a slight tweak in where people stand and that sort of stuff. So that's stuff that we will see over time. But as Farrell said, that's the stuff that takes time. Getting your commitment right, getting your physicality right is the stuff that he can get fixed in the short term. And I think it will be unfair to expect him to come out and play like Japan in attack in the first game.
No,
and,
it's true.
And whether they'll go there at all.
They had five training sessions effectively before this game, just gone at the weekend. So Farrell did his press conference today.
Yeah.
Keane Healy spoke as well. I think, did I see Ian Henderson?
Yeah.
Were they asked about the nature of the Monday morning review?
Yeah, Henderson was. I was actually in another room doing newspaper interviews. Farrell was asked about that in the embargo bit as well. But no, yeah, okay. It's, I mean, you saw the Conor Murray stuff, I presume. I mean, Conor Murray said it was fun. It was great fun. And I have a piece about it tomorrow. I mean, it looks like they've brought in a more dynamic thing where it's because of the, I'm sure Joe Schmidt would have done this because the facility affords them this ability to go and put something on the screen and then go out and do it on the pitch. So you're not sitting in a stuffy room talking for an hour.
Because they have the
they have an indoor pitch facility with a screen. So he goes over, shows them something. This is how I imagine it. I'm not sure, I haven't been to one, but you know, he go to this TV, you go, this happened in 12 minutes, this is the mistake we made, this is what we should have done. Let's get out there and do it. You go out for 5 minutes, you run through that, then you go back to the screen, you go, right, 25 minutes, this is what you should have done. And that's it. Like, I'm sure if Schmidt had access to that, he would have been doing that himself. You know, he would have made use of the tools. But I think that has, by, you know, talking to the players, seems to have freshened them up. But that's what they, I think any new coach was always going to do that. And if you've had the same coach for 6 years, some of them had Joe for 9, 10 years, of course a new voice and a new style, a new approach is going to be hailed. And I mean, you're never going to criticise your new boss. You're always going to say...
We are in the honeymoon period.
Of course we are. It's not much of a honeymoon period though, because he is from the old regime and he is sticking with the old players. So he's kind of putting that at risk by, you know, not ushering in French style change.
Opening weekend on the whole then, so Wales, France, England specifically?
God, England were awful, weren't they? I mean, I know they picked it up second half, but I watched it knowing the results.
Hard to fathom awful.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if you think about it, like, I mean, I thought a lot of Eddie Jones bluster in the greatest team in the world stuff, or the world has ever seen, that was all Saracens related. That was like, let's move the story on, let's get away from, he didn't want to be asked questions about Saracens. But, you know, his players are living with that. You know, like, there's got to be tension. And I know they said they had this clear the air meeting. What does that really look like? You know, what does that look like when Owen Farrell's going to his agent every day on what's going on? How is that affecting them? There's a lot of talk in the English media about whether, you know, Farrell, and this will come up with Johnny Sexton if things start going wrong, has he got too much responsibility? Is everything on his shoulders as the key decision maker and the captain and dealing with the refs and all of that? I was surprised by it. I tipped them for a slam in here on Saturday, and I'm surprised by how awful they were. Albeit they got their act together and almost did to France what Wales did to them last year, which would have been a heartbreaker. I didn't see an awful lot of the Wales game, but I'm not surprised that they hammered Italy. Italy are given a tour of a final lap of honour to Parise at home. You know, they're not taking this particularly seriously, as far as I can see. So we'll know more about Wales this weekend. And France were magnificent, and are an advertisement. Now, they have access to all these players. They're the two under-20 World Cup winning teams.
Yeah.
They have 14 clubs full of French players. They've got this golden generation coming through. They have a new coach. And Ireland don't have that. We can't replicate it. I think we could look to them a little bit, but you can't bring in 20 new players and bring in, you know, no one over 30. We just don't have the scope to do that. But it was so refreshing. And it's great to see them back, albeit when they do well, Ireland don't tend to do as well. I think our purple patch in the Six Nations over the last 10 years has kind of come at a time when France, there's been no coincidence that France have been in decline. If they can go to Cardiff and win, that's the real test for them, because I think there's still a bit, we saw a second half, there's still a bit of an experience there, but they've got great players in Dupont and a few lads like that.
Yeah, Dupont's outrageous at the moment. And even Intermac, not even kicking at Toulouse and just seamlessly
putting
the ball over it under big pressure under the circumstances.
Yeah, they've grown up winning those players, which is important because you know, there's been a culture of losing in France for a decade and of not enjoying national camp and of having poor coaching, and I think players going in and not really caring because they don't believe in it. Whereas now these guys have come through. It's pretty scary.
The tournament needs it though, really, as well, because like rugby, even at the best of times, is always open to the accusation that, well, you're achieving big things in a sport that about 10 countries play or less. And for the Six Nations in particular, with the Italian situation, I mean, just for the kind of integrity of the tournament, to not even have France at the table was really bad decade.
I mean, really bad. Ireland hammered France. Ireland were having the worst year we've had in so long last season, and they hammered France in Aviva last year.
It was
awful, and it wasn't an Ireland France match as we remember it. You know, and it's been a while since we, like, obviously going to Paris is always difficult. And that's not a cliche. You know, it took Sexton's drop goal last time, and 3 years ago they lost there.
Yeah.
Even at their low points, they still are decent at home. But they got hammered in London and Dublin last year. It's not good for the tournament. I mean, France should be at power, and scarily, I think for Ireland, the caliber of athlete they produce is on par with what England and South Africa are producing, and maybe New Zealand. And that's where Ireland are behind, and that's what Farrell needs to figure out is how to keep pace with those countries when we don't produce the same kind of calibre of athletes.
Yeah, it's not an easy question. You know, you think of Leo Cullen on the touchline after the Saracens final saying
genetics.
Genetics. Yeah. What's your favourite anthem in the Six Nations?
The Italian.
Oh.
Yeah, it depends where it's been played. I mean, they always butcher it in Evviva, but when you go to Rome and you hear it properly, it's usually the high point of, well, I mean, the food as well, but you know, the match is never the high point of the trip to Rome. It's always the anthem.
All you've proven at the end of this hour is nobody agrees on the best anthem. But Flair of Scotland is good, isn't it?
Mid-table. I think Flair of Scotland lost its lustre for me when they voted against independence. And most of the Scottish rugby population would have agitated against independence.
Yeah.
And then they go out and they sing about sending them home to think again. It kind of undermines the sentiment behind it.
Well, that's difficult to argue with. I'll put that to Tom English, who's on the way after 8 o'clock.
I'm sure Tom has some opinions.
Remembering the Grand Slam game of 30 years ago. They play again, obviously, this weekend. Rory O'Connor, Irish Independent, thanks very much.
Cheers, Joe.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.